Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
I'm being shown that I shouldn't hide so much, that I should be more front and center and talk about these things and be myself in a bigger way, because it encourages women to embrace that part in themselves.
You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Krista Smith.
It's such a pleasure to welcome Gillian Anderson back to the show. In 2020, right before the pandemic, we discussed the second season of Sex Education, which recently concluded with its fourth season. We also discussed her upcoming role as Margaret Thatcher on The Crown. That performance earned her numerous awards, including an Emmy and a Golden Globe. Over the course of her 30-year career, Gillian has starred in series such as The X-Files, Bleak House, and The Fall, tackled roles in films like The House of Mirth, The Last King of Scotland, and The Pale Blue Eye, and appeared on stage in All About Eve and A Streetcar Named Desire. In addition to being an award-winning actor, Gillian is also a philanthropist, entrepreneur, producer, and author. In fact, her new book, Want, which anonymously explores the sexual desires of women from all over the world, will be available in September. We'll get into all of the above. Plus, we'll learn about her new film, Scoop. Inspired by real events, Scoop gives the inside account of the tenacious journalism that landed Prince Andrew's infamous BBC Newsnight interview. Gillian portrays Emily Maitlis, the journalist who conducted that alarming and shocking interview. Hello, gorgeous.
Hi.
How are you?
I'll take that.
Yeah. I was realizing the last time we met, it was pre-pandemic in 2020. I did not have glasses then, nor was I sitting in this fabulous studio with our new Skip Intro mic flags with mugs. And I'm so proud. I was like, oh my God, we've come a long way, even though now we do everything basically over Zoom and not so much in person anymore. But it's great to see you.
It's good to see you too.
We were talking about your prep for Thatcher at the time, and you couldn't really say much. Obviously, it was the second season of Sex Education, and you were just in the early stages of prepping for Margaret Thatcher.
Feels like such a long time ago.
Yeah, awards later and whatnot. It's pretty amazing. And it's been so magnificent to go through the whole six seasons of The Crown again and just to see those moments that are so memorable.
Netflix has been a really wonderful family for me, and I'm incredibly grateful to them, whether it's TV or film or what have you. They're a wonderful partner to go on this life slash art journey with.
When you came on Sex Education, it was such a giant moment for everybody. No one knew the show was going to be so huge. Like, talk about owning this conversation and women owning their own sexuality. It's just so incredible to think about what one show can do at the right time with the right audience. What was that like with the ending of Sex Education? I mean, you did such a beautiful tribute to it on Instagram, I have to say.
It felt like a real gift of a role. I'd done comedy and theater before, and certainly in X-Files, some people may or may not remember that there were some comedic episodes where we got to be funny. And so the fact that they cast me and I had an opportunity to explore and to reveal that side of what I do felt like a real gift. And I think I was so grateful that I just kind of jumped into it with both feet, hands, feet, head, everything, just all of me. And certainly, you know, the first couple seasons pre-pandemic. It was at a time when Me Too had just happened and there were so many concerns and suddenly rules around appropriateness, et cetera. And yet there was something so freeing in this show of celebrating, really celebrating attraction and sexuality and everything to do with our bodies and our awkwardness and our mistakes and our goals and our desires and our dreams and our, you know, everything, in that it felt suddenly incredibly fresh and risky in the best way because it was so inclusive. What a lot of people may not know is that my bit in that series, I shot in 4 weeks every season. The last season, it was maybe 5 weeks, but it felt like it was such a big deal and a momentous thing, both for me and I think just Jean in general, in terms of the balance of her in the series. And yet it took up so little of my time. It seemed completely disproportionate to the degree to which it was in my life in other ways. And also that series was in so many people's lives. The first few seasons of Jean, she was almost too good to be true in a way. And it was important for me to inject a bit more of my experience of being a woman in later life and just the degree of chaos and feeling at any given time that I don't have it all together and that things aren't so easy and so perfect, I guess, in a way. And so getting to show that side through the story of her pregnancy and pre and post baby and perimenopause and all that, they almost allowed me to take her into a completely different character and how she shows up. But that's what you feel like around the time that you're having kids. You feel like you're no longer yourself anymore. It feels like you are a different human being, got a different body, different brain, different everything. And so I'm very grateful that they let me run with that. Mm. So I think it was a right time for it to go, but it was certainly sad.
And there was some great fun scenes in that chaos. And I have to say, on behalf of all of us, it's sad to see it go, but you're right. It was the right time. And it's just a brilliant show. All right. Let's talk about your new film, Scoop. Now, what's so interesting, too, is as someone that lived in this space for 25 years when I worked at Vanity Fair, of getting the story, getting that interview, it was so great to see behind the scenes of how this team of women got this interview. And subsequently, its incredible impact with Prince Andrew stepping back from royal duties just days after it aired, and then eventually being stripped of his royal titles. For you, Jillian, what made you want to play Emily Maitlis?
Firstly, it was the script. The script was fantastic. And I was very impressed with how Peter Moffat had taken this interview that we knew so well and managed to structure the securing of it and the journey to convincing the royal family to, or Prince Andrew's team, to let him do it. And also it taking place, he structured it in a way that at every turn you think that they may lose it, even though in real life you know that it took place. And so he really created a thriller in a very organic way. You don't get a sense that he's trying to force anything. And so I was intrigued by that. And it was a very muscular script. And I love journalist stories anyway. But I at first was too daunted by the idea of playing somebody that is still alive. I've played some deceased women before, but nobody's still alive. And she's very much a part of the world I live in. I know people that know her. It's similar neighborhoods. And she is, if not on screens, she has been when she was Newsnight and BBC, but in our ears now with her podcast. And so it felt almost too daunting to take her on. But I was convinced by the writer and the director to take the plunge. And I kind of knew that I should, even though I was saying no, I kind of knew that I had to. And obviously really glad that I did, really pleased with how it's turned out. I think all the performances are fantastic. Billy and Rufus and Romola and Keeley, and it's a great group of actors. And I really love what Philip Martin has done with it. He's done, you know, he was one of the directors on The Crown. I'd met him before, but I hadn't worked with him And it's a really unique take on it and very modern. And I wouldn't necessarily have expected that this take would have come from him. So it feels like he's really jumped into an area that, you know, is a bold, confident flavor. And I'm really happy with it. It's a great, fun watch.
For you, in becoming Emily, as an actor, what was the first thing that you had to get right? Was it the certain kind of bob hair, the way she walked in a suit? What was it for you as an actor that really you're like, okay, now I've got it. I've got to get this thing first, and then the rest will come.
The hair, makeup, and wardrobe, one relies on other people to do that. And I knew that there was a really good team taking care of that element of it. And of course, there were many fittings. There's a wonderful wig maker called Alex Rouse, who has made the majority of the wigs that I've worn, I think. She's got my mold, so we can send her pictures, and she basically starts making it. And then I go in for a fitting, and sometimes it needs to be thinner, it needs to be thicker, or lighter, or shorter, or all those kind of things. But knowing and trusting that we'll get there with that. Kirsten Chalmers, who did the makeup and oversaw the hair. Again, a lot of sittings to get the particular kind of tan, the tone of tan right, and the coal makeup around her eyes and the colors of nail polish. So all of those things are really going to help on the day when you are finally in costume and behaving like them, because they, of course, they're going to add to that. It was the same thing with Thatcher, knowing that once I was in that, the silhouette of Thatcher is unmistakable. So at least I can trust that that will be taken care of. And then so the rest of it in terms of actions and voice is something that very much happens in the privacy of one's own home and trying stuff and playing constantly with Bix, getting used to having a Bic in the left hand, and she holds it very particularly and gesticulates with it confidently. And so getting used to that. And she has a little bit of an underbite. And so identifying something like that can help from the inside out, feeling that I'm no longer me, I'm her. Getting the tone and the pitch of the voice right and all that. And then you just have to hope that it all comes together on the day. It's kind of like riding a horse. I remember years ago, for some strange reason, I didn't grow up with horses, but I bought one while I was doing X-Files. And every once in a while, I would ride it. And I was amazed at how many things have to happen at the same time. The knees and the ankles and the butt and the posture and the fingers. And it's a little bit like that. It's a whole body thing, that your whole body has to be engaged at the same time and kind of alive and awake and knowing what each part is doing, if doing it differently than what your default is to do. Once you can identify those things, the different way of walking than your own walking, or the different way of standing hips forward, or whatever those things are, a different way of the tilt of the head or the looking down and up, and just hope that on the day they all come together at the right time. You're trying for that to be the case, but at the end of the day, you just kind of have to hope for the best and do your best. And hopefully when you see it months later doing ADR, or you see the actual film, that's the first time that you actually properly get a sense as to whether it worked or not, mm-hmm. as an actor, at least, you know.
You and Rufus Sewell are playing two people that people know very well and know what they look like. But I love the tension that director Philip Martin created. It dropped you in where you immediately understood the stakes for both the Newsnight team, where you have Sam McAllister and Esme Wren, and also Prince Andrew and his private secretary. I want to talk about when you actually sit down to the interview, because this is something that has been watched, obviously, over and over again. I'm sure you watched it to get the right cadences. Did you memorize it all? Because I was reading that originally it was going to be shot in pieces, and then eventually on the day you just did the whole thing. Is that correct?
It was originally going to be shot in pieces. There were a lot of cutaways to the other people mm-hmm. in the room. They even cut back to the BBC, to Esme waiting and wondering how it's going. And so part of the build of tension is, as much as anything, also the reactions of the other characters simultaneously. We had a conversation, Philip, Rufus, and I think right when Rufus started, that we were going to try and do it all in one. Like we were going to try and do the interview as one piece rather than chop it up. And Philip had asked how we felt about it. And I felt like I could do it from the research that I'd done, you know, and I had, there's a girl that I often use who created the 20-minute version based on what the news script was of the interview. And so I would watch that version, our version of it, of the real one. And then I had an audio file that she put together for me, which was just the questions in my head. And then there was an audio file of the questions on repeat so that I really properly got used to. So I would watch and listen. And so there was that. And then on the day that we went in to shoot it, it was the first time that Rufus and I were seeing the set. And it was a verbatim recreation of that wing of Buckingham Palace. And all the cameras that had been there on the day for that interview were set up, plus our cameras. And they were all going to be running. So there were 6 or 8 cameras that were going to be running. And so we showed up and sat down in our chairs and got mic'd up and made sure that my legs were crossed in the right place. And then her notepad was in the right hand, Bic was in the right hand, and it was time to start. And Philip said, do you want to try one? And so that's exactly what happened. We did it and we started and we took it to the end.
Just for the record, you've been on his private plane.
Yes.
You've been to stay on his private island.
Yes.
You've stayed at his home in Palm Beach.
Yes.
So in 2006, in May, an arrest warrant was issued for Epstein for sexual assault of a minor.
Yes.
He was released in July of 2010, and within months, you went to stay with him at his New York mansion. Why? Why were you staying with a convicted sex offender?
It was like a piece of theater. It was like a first act of a play. It was incredible to have that experience. That's what you want as an actor, right? We did it many, many times after that. But seeing Rufus for the first time, we hadn't rehearsed it. And there's no telling that the other person is going to go away and do the same kind of research or what is going to happen. You're going to have to stop and start. But he was as prepared as I was, and we got to actually do the interview, and I got to see him doing it for the first time. And it was hard to keep my focus on my stuff because I was so impressed by what he was doing and how like Andrew he was behaving. And so it was a very bizarre, kind of surreal moment.
Yeah, and I'm sure the same for him. It's just such a great scene, and just the different reactions, like you said, the way he directed it, it's just really well done because...
Yeah, and also the editing, really good editing. And the fact that I remember when I first saw it, I've only seen it twice now, but when I first saw it, I gasped when the interview actually started, you know, as an audience member watching it. There's something that he does, and I think I was looking out for it. I think it's that suddenly he's in that close-up in our eyes. But then all of a sudden, the first question starts, right? And you go from wide and with everybody else to you're in the interview. And then it's the gunfight. Somehow, they set it up in such a masterful way that it is, even though you've seen it before, even though you know where it's going to end up, even though everything, it is surprising. And that's a great director.
All things came together. I want to take you back a little bit to the beginning. One thing that's always stuck out to me is that you responded to the punk movement when you were a teenager. I'm projecting completely onto you here, so correct me if I'm wrong. You've always had this really strong punk streak in you. Even back when you were on The X-Files, you were balancing an incredibly demanding job with being a young mom. Yet somehow you had the confidence to sit down with the head of a studio and say, hey, me over here, why am I not making as much as my co-star? Fast forward and seeing the opportunity for something like sex education and realizing there's a need here for women of all ages to feel empowered by their sexuality. And I'm going to fill it. It's just astounding. That moment feels like it was a launching pad for the conversation you've created around the power of pleasure. which includes your beverage company, G-Spot, and is soon to include your new book, Want, which creates the space for women to think about their own desires through reading this anonymous collection of sexual fantasies, one of which is written by you. But what is that in Jillian? Was it nature or nurture? Were you born that way? Did you learn to become that way? Were you faking it until you made it? I'd love for you to discuss a little bit about that, because it's a pattern that I've noticed even, you know, in the roles you choose. You've got to have fucking confidence to take on Margaret Thatcher in The Crown, and you don't hesitate.
It's an interesting way of asking that question, and I appreciate everything that you've brought to it. I think that everything that happened in my childhood fed into exactly that. And that includes our move, and that includes being an only child until my brother and sister came along. And that, so all the things that ended up happening and feeling like an outsider and other things that I'd never really spoken about that happened, and all of the things that happened that at various points might have seemed like versions of adversity or trauma, I think they all contributed to exactly whatever that is in me, which is, I think from a very young age, I felt like an adult and I behaved like an adult, and nobody was going to tell me anything. And certainly my parents, my mom has said before that she had to let me do the things that I did because I was just going to do them anyway. You know, that was her take on me as a young. And so some of it is circumstance. And I think that some of it is definitely, I came out that way. And there was a point in my high school years where I was really struggling, and there were a lot of things going on and a lot of drugs and drinking and all that kind of stuff. And my grades weren't great. And I discovered acting. And I've spoken about this before, as it being something that felt like, it's like everything suddenly made sense. I felt like I had this superpower in a way. And then I directed something. All of a sudden, I'd found this thing that I could do. And I think that there's something about the creative process, both in that, and I feel it sometimes when I'm talking about the business that I'm building or the drink or the other things that are all part of it. And so much of it too is about what people, particularly women, feed back to me through Instagram or however, about how they see the stuff that I'm doing, what they get from it, what they get from the characters that I've played, what they get from my charity work, what they get from how I show up and the things that I jump into with both feet and fearlessness and whatever. And hearing the degree to which that, yes, acting as if, makes me feel like there is a purpose for me being that way. Or I don't know if it's leading by example or if it's, you know, when I started doing X-Files, I was 24 years old. And I lied and said that I was 27 because I didn't think I'd be cast if I was just 24. And, you know, and suddenly that was quite a big thing. You know, it was number one show and it was, and I... But also Scully was a doctor and she was a forensic pathologist and it was all these things. And I was meant to, in scenes, I had a really squeaky voice back then. I was meant to, in these scenes, like, tell this line of male FBI agents what to do. And I remember thinking, I can't, like, me? Like, are you kidding me? I don't, you know. And so there's been so much of, as you say, exactly that, just showing up and acting as if. And eventually, by season whatever, I kind of felt like I could do it without thinking, why are they asking me, or I can't, or whatever. You know, it's just, it is putting one foot in front of the other. And so if there is some kind of inspiration in there, whether it's that women see me being fearless, or whether women are seeing me running a business or being an entrepreneur, then that's great. And part of That too is around the Scully effect. And so much has been written around the Scully effect and the impact that the character of Scully had on women going into STEM at that time and continues to inspire women to do those things. So to me, it's possible that if I weren't getting the feedback that I'm getting, it would feel like it was more in a bubble and kind of off over here. Because I do, on the one hand, have a tendency to be a bit of a hermit and to not put myself out front and center. But the fact, I think, that there's been such a response from women of all ages to Jean, to Stella Gibson, to Scully, I'm being shown that I shouldn't hide so much, that I should be more front and center and talk about these things and be myself in a bigger way, because it encourages women to embrace that part in themselves. And so it might have been a much quieter journey had it not been for women like you saying out loud, gosh, wow, because then that in and of itself makes me think there's a purpose, there's a reason for taking these risks or saying what's on my mind or leaping off the bridge or whatever it is. And it's cool. It's like it's a circle. It's a virtuous cycle of, I don't know, energy giving.
I'm sure you've seen the amazing tribute reels for you on social media, if you have, and it's incredible. Like, people cut together these reels of all your characters and what you've worn or said or whatnot. I'm glad that someone like myself can really bring that to the forefront for you, because I do think you were the right person at the right time and you haven't squandered that. And not only have you not squandered that, you've seen other opportunities to make that noise louder and to make that noise more global and more infectious and have bigger conversations. And I think that that is so transcends just being an actor. It's like you've taken this stuff and you've thrown it out there for people to examine it. And also you've made it a community where people feel like, hey, I can belong here, even though I didn't think I could say this out loud.
You know, I want to take what you've just said and I want to capture it and put it in a bottle and show it to the team of these great women and people that I have working for me right now, and just saying, you know, what you guys are doing and the microphone that we're currently using right now is working because she gets it. She gets what we're trying to do. And she's saying we're doing it the right way. And I'm very grateful for you feeding that back to me, because sometimes it really does feel like it's a bit in a vacuum and so many plates and so many things spinning. So that's incredibly meaningful to me. So thank you very much for saying that.
Well, thank you, Jillian. It's great to catch up with you and see you again. And I can't wait to see what you do next. I'm here when that happens. I'm a giant plus 1111111 to anything you're doing or talking about or creating or writing. And I really appreciate you taking the time and talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Scoop is now streaming on Netflix. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Krista Smith, your host and creator of the show. Skip Intro is produced and edited by Isabel Arricchio and engineered by Dave Corwin. Special thanks to our coordinator, Alyssa Hillman. Please subscribe, rate, and review Skip Intro wherever you've been listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. If you enjoy the podcast, please go to netflixqe.com for more. That's netflixqueue.com.